It is Friday, and you know what that means.
Wednesdays are the new Fridays.
It is Wednesday, and you know what that means.
Hey, let's do get help.
What?
Get help?
No.
Come on, you love it.
I hate it.
It's great. It works every time.
It's humiliating.
Do you have a better plan?
No.
We're doing it.
We are not doing get help.
Oh, yes, we are. And I am Goo, sitting next to Wesley Sykes. Hello, Wes.
Hello, hello. How are we doing today?
Well, I just sat down to, I believe, this is rapid reaction, and I don't want to jump too far ahead, but I believe my favorite episode of Loki. I'm not saying it's the best, but I think it's my favorite.
Okay, because last week you said you wanted some time to chew on episode 4, a little bit, digest it and everything. So given this week now, you think it's what 5 and 4 are the 1-2 at the moment?
Or? So 5. If we're looking at, like, technically, is it the best episode? Maybe not. But for me, I would say that this is the most rewatchable one. This is the one where I had a smile for most of the episode. Like, I just had a ton of fun with these characters. So if I'm choosing episodes, I go 5, 2, 4. And then 1 and 3 are kind of a toss-up either way.
Yeah, I think 4 is still number 1 for me. I think 5 is probably 2, you know, number 2 in that conversation with episode 2. They're a really convoluted thing. So I think, you know, we have the same tiers, which probably ordered a little bit different here. But I agree with you. The fun factor was through the roof on
huge.
This was the variants at their best, at their peak here, kind of seeing everyone kind of collide and everyone kind of use their own unique Loki personality or powers or whatever. So I thought that was at its best. And we're still waiting for the big reveal for episode 6. So I kind of like that they saved that mystery to find out everything at the end there. Hopefully everything at the end.
Yeah, and this might just be a me thing, but this is what I expected when going into this show, is fun with variant Lokis.
Yes, exactly. And we got little hints of that, right, with them on Pompeii and Loki being D.B. Cooper and some of that cool, fun stuff that we saw throughout here. But this, again, was the bang for your buck, you know, kind of all jammed in there, getting everything that you can all kind of in one shot, which I liked. And again, the episode title is very kind of leading itself into episode 6 very well, Journey into the Mystery of what is beyond the timeline, right? And into the void and everything too. So I love the choice of titles throughout this series so far.
So two things here. Number one, we are spoiler filled. So we are about to just dive right into this sumbitch. And then number two, and this is now becoming a big pet peeve of mine, there was no mid or post credit scene this week after we got one last week. I feel like Marvel needs to decide, are we going to do these or are we not going to do these? Are we going to do these starting at the midway point and go forward with it? Like, I don't like that we had one last week and we're not getting one this week leading into the final episode.
So I thought what worked really well for episode 4, and I would like the uniformity there, I agree with you, but what I thought worked well with episode 4 is that kind of false drop at the end. And that, you know, I think in episode 3 and episode 5, we both kind of get left, you know, with that cliffhanger there. And same to the extent with episode 4 when he gets pruned, oh my God, what happens? What's Loki? You know, what's happening to him? Where is he going? And then you get that nice stinger. I thought that was very well done to kind of give you that little extra tease, that amuse-bouche to kind of carry you into the main course of episode 5. So I thought that was, I liked that, but I think on the whole, I think MCU, Marvel, Disney Plus needs to figure it out. You know, uniform one way or the other.
And then, of course, there is now an internet theory going around that Loki episodes, and this was sent to us by @bo89socks, Jeremy, that each Loki episode is based on an Infinity Stone. And I'll tell you right now off the top, not buying it.
Yeah, so this was tweeted July 6th, so yesterday our time, at 7:39 in the morning. And to this point, it has 621 quote tweets, about 2,700 retweets, excuse me, and 22,000 likes. So this is getting a lot of play here.
Oh, and by the way, sorry, this is tweeted out by @LokiPadfoot, not to, you know, not give them credit. But
give credit where credit is due.
Hey,
absolutely.
Credit.
Where credit is goo, perhaps.
Yes.
But of course, it comes through this thread where it's summating that all the Loki episodes represent an Infinity Stone, a la the commercials in WandaVision, right? That was a running speculative theory that was, I'm not sure that bore out to be true.
I feel like it was at the beginning and then it fell apart.
I think you're right about that. But again, it pretty much says episode one is the Soul Stone, seeing a lot of orange. And this is all just based color based. And then, you know, it gives four photos there as evidence, which is, you know, it's nice. I can appreciate the theory. I'm not sure if I buy into it.
I think that's my biggest issue with this theory is they're going purely color based of like, well, look at the color palette in this episode. And yes, you can say that episode one is the Soul Stone. You're dealing with Loki's soul and, you know, how he deals. He sees the rest of his life play out. And yes, there's always a question, does he have a soul? He doesn't even know if he has a soul. He doesn't know if he's a robot or not. But then every episode after that, you are dealing with both time and reality.
Yeah, the whole show is about time. So, yeah, I'm not sure where that's supposed to come in. But I think this person put a lot of effort into it and some good thought. That's more than just the color palette. You know, this is like episode two, they're questioning what is real and what is not, hence the reality stone. You know, three, they're dealing with power
dynamics.
Then
they post a photo of red. That's where they're losing me.
Yeah, that's true. Four, right, the Mind Stone, which is supposed to be some off, that's kind of yellow in this, mm-hmm. but, you know, changing the minds, getting into the minds of enchantment with the Hunter C-15, or C-20 and B-15, rather. So it's interesting, but again, it's very vague.
So I think it's more, and this is really just dealing with the color palette, and that is that Thor movies in general have exaggerated colors. Have bright colors.
Yeah, exactly. And especially in the Thor Ragnarok post era, right?
Yeah.
The post Thor Ragnarok era. I think they're definitely dealing with the bright colors. And we see the MCU as a whole really clinching to that color palette aspect to define powers for each individual, right? So I think that just may be more of a sign of the times than like a big little tip of the cap secret.
Let me share more credit here. This
yes.
person here at Loki Padfoot also says, just a fun theory I saw at backslash, I want to say. I'm always bad with the backslash and the forward slash, but backslash, she_loves_Marvel put this up on TikTok. So credit to them, less credit to this Twitter handle, but still a little bit of credit.
Right, but all the credit to Bo89Socks for bringing this to our attention.
That's the most important.
Despite this virality, we did not see it until them. So credit to them more importantly. And I believe that's a forward slash, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm always so bad with it.
It's weird, yeah.
Like, I can find it on the keyboard, fine. I just don't know what to call them.
You know what really gets me in a pretzel is bi-weekly, bi-monthly. What does that mean?
So iTunes now, not to get into iTunes, I have my issue with iTunes, but one of
course,
the selections on iTunes is how often do you release an episode? And it says bi-weekly or semi-weekly. So I think semi-weekly is every other week and bi-weekly is twice a week, but I'm so confused by it.
See, if you look it up online, and I've tried to, you know, nip this in the bud, if you will.
Yeah.
And it's either or. Bi-weekly either means
thing.
Twice a week
yes.
or every other week, depending on the person. So I don't know. Bi-monthly, twice a month, or every other month. I don't know.
I have a promo for my less successful podcast, Mac and Goo, where it says podcast release bi-weekly. And people don't know what that means. They always say, oh, every other week. It's like, no, twice a week. Kinda, I think.
Variant words here to tie it all back in here. And I can't tell one between the other here. Much like all the different Lokis that we saw in the Void, Goo.
I loved it. I loved it so much.
I thought it was awesome. And again, it's revealed pretty quickly in the episode that once you are pruned, you are not, in fact, dead, but you go to this place called the Void, which we can only assume is at the end of the timeline somewhere between space and time, right?
Yep.
That's kind of
the space stone. It's the space stone.
Maybe hanging in limbo for comic book fans.
Yeah.
We are not, but for comic book fans.
Well, how about this?
That might be a reference.
For you, purgatory.
Oh, I like that as well. Yeah.
Lost.
Yes. Now we're really tying it in here. I like that as well. So we get classic Loki, Richard E. Grant. We have boastful Loki here, who is played by, I'm going to butcher this person's name. I apologize for it. Diabaya Opere. And then one of the, I think who kind of stole the show, at least from a human form, Jack Veal. Very fitting last name for a young boy who's playing Kid Loki.
I liked Kid Loki. I liked classic Loki a little bit more, though.
Well, I think we can say without hesitation that Alligator Loki.
Sorry, you're right.
Stole the show.
Alligator Loki, and we said, is this something that you know they're just having fun with because of Throg? And not to jump too far ahead here.
Yo, you saw that Easter egg?
We saw Throg. We saw Throg.
Sure did.
We got Throg.
And it's like, you know, almost in kind of like an Ant-Man illusion there too. So
yeah,
you know,
I had to go back and look at it a couple times because I thought, is this a variant of Ant-Man? Because, you know, maybe some quantum realm stuff. How are they dealing with that? And then, of course, we also got the Easter egg.
Yo, you saw that Easter egg?
The Yellow Jacket's helmet is in the void. So is that the Yellow Jacket? Is this where he goes?
Oh, see, I did not see that. I saw your note there, and I appreciate your note. Credit to Goo.
Credit here to me. But in that, you can clearly see it is a frog wearing a Viking helmet.
Yes, and trying to get Mjolnir, right? Or it's in that underground lair as the camera's panning down into the Loki lair there. But, so I think that is very interesting. So I loved all those little spoilers. We'll get into a little more of that later. But of course, we see Loki is saved by the variants, again, taken to that underground lair. And we find out that they're being chased by the Eliath, which is another big reveal here. Which on its surface is a cloud dragon that eats all organic matter in the void.
I like it. It looked very nice, too. It looked movie quality.
Yes, yes. I thought it looked pretty cool. And again, we'll get into a little bit more on who or what the Eliath is and its purpose a little bit later. Each Loki shares, again, how they got into the void. Loki tries to rally the troops and kill the Eliath and escape the void. However, they get ambushed by President Loki, and a Loki battle ensues, Goo, which I think might be the high point of this episode.
Absolutely is, and every Loki tries to backstab another Loki.
Yes, yes. So we see boastful Loki who, you know, again, I'm not sure if we can trust his word there that he killed both Thor and Captain America and got all six Infinity Stones.
Yes, because classic Loki pretty much said, okay, you definitely killed all of them, where he might have killed Thor. Actually, I'm sorry. I think Kid Loki killed Thor.
He did, yes.
Boastful Loki claimed that he killed Captain America and Iron Man, and that's when they were like, okay, not so fast, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. And then again, talking about the Infinity Stones there, and it appears that Kid Loki is the ruler of this, maybe the first one there. And again, that would align with the timeline, right? If he was there at, you know, killed Thor at such a young age.
Or is he just the most successful of the Loki? Like all the other Loki have tried to kill Thor in the past, and he's the only one that actually pulled it off.
Also true. I think both can be very true there.
Because we also saw, because we said last week, is boastful Loki. We didn't know who he was at the time, but we saw him holding a hammer. Is that Mjolnir? It's not Mjolnir. I don't think it's Mjolnir. I think it's just a random hammer, unless it's some kind of a variant of Mjolnir, but it looked a lot different.
I don't think they made even a reference to it or anything, or even brought it up too. So, which is weird that they would do something, you know, so on the nose to Mjolnir and then not even reference it later. And I love the alligator Loki. The alligator Loki comes up. He's just biting hands left
and
right.
Damn alligator, bit my hand off.
Yeah, exactly. So where's Chubbs when you need him, huh? Also, so we head back to the TVA where Ravonna and Sylvie kind of battle a little bit. Ravonna nearly tricks Sylvie, but she ends up pruning herself when cornered by the Minutemen and herself in that kind of judge courtroom area. Yeah. Ravonna appears to not know everything that's going on.
But also does.
Like, right? Yeah.
I don't know what's happening here. Like, you kind of have to pick. I mean, is she just playing coy with Sylvie to then, you know, kind of branch off and do her own thing? Or does she truly not know the end game of what's happening with the TVA?
Yeah, it's very interesting. And again, like I mentioned to you this morning, I would have liked a little bit more time spent on Ravonna this episode and kind of what's going on and her motives, as opposed to the love angle, which we get a little bit later in the scene between Sylvie and Loki. But again, like, does she know more? Is she trying to extract information from, you know, Hunter B-15 and other people to see how much they know and how dumb that she has to play throughout all of this? You know, so I'm wondering, you know, she seems like a master manipulator from what we know, which falls in line with everyone else, kind of all these kind of Lokis and everything.
So do you think that she is in charge of everything right now? Do you think that she is the main villain? Because we're heading into episode 6, not seeing anyone else that might be pulling the strings, unless, and I saw this is an internet theory, and I kind of like it, is Miss Minutes the villain?
Yeah, so I think, again, Miss Minutes, she's also a tricky little bitch. I think, I'm not sure if we can trust her as much as we can throw her here. You know, she's very, very kind of coy about everything, even when talking to Ravonna about getting, you know, the history of the TVA and, you know, the end of time to what happens there. And you can tell they're kind of working together when they're kind of stalling with Sylvie too. So I have a lot of questions about Miss Minutes. If she is the one pulling the strings, I would be very disappointed because there's been so little time spent with her. You know,
but there's
like
so little time
episodes.
Spent with anyone else that might have done this. Like, you can't just introduce Kang now.
Right. So I think, and we can get into this a little bit more here with our questionnaire.
And also, let me just point this out really quickly too, is that Miss Minutes is... anything that she is doing is not happening live. Everything is pre-recorded, but they know how time works. So that's right. How it's just played over.
And again, I love the clippy, you know, the kind of clippy play there from Microsoft. But so we have Sylvie who kind of prunes herself. She awakes in the void and briefly connects with the Elias, which I thought was kind of cheap. That she could connect to the smoke god monster and kind of enchant it. But eventually gets saved by Mobius, who we find out is alive in this void. They drive to the Lokis here. They kind of have a little heart-to-heart. They pass that Sphinx that I referenced last week, Sphinx in the Pyramids. Sylvie and Loki then have this heart-to-heart when they meet all of the Lokis together, right? And that's what I was saying, that, like, I could kind of do without. It kind of brought, like, to use your words here, the whole episode to a grinding halt.
It did, and another thing that I really wish that we got in this episode is we got the one Mobius. I would have loved to have seen three Mobiuses, and they're all played by Owen Wilson. And I know they said this is not going to happen, but maybe when he sees the other ones, wow. Maybe.
Yeah. Just a wow loop, and then it's just all of them kind of doing like a round. Wow, wow.
You know how we have time loops on the show? It's just a big loop of wows.
Yeah, it's just a Mexican standoff of wows. I like that. That could be really good. What about the theory that Mobius is a Loki?
Ooh, I like that. Where'd you find that one?
Well, it's just the idea that everybody is a Loki too, you know, or a variant of some sorts, right? So, you know, who better to catch a Loki than a Loki himself?
So off of that, I do want to get back to that in a second because I like that a lot. But Sylvie in the episode does say that she is a variant Loki. So she does admit to it.
Right. So you can put to bed the Enchantress rumors and hopes and stuff,
I always
right?
thought that the Enchantress was the Red Heron, and I thought that maybe she might be the character Sylvie, but I think this plays a little bit tidier with the story. So just back to Owen Wilson. I really like that idea that he's a Loki, and now he is the Loki that deals with other Lokis, because we talked about this after episode one. I love the idea of them getting this variant Loki to hunt other variant Lokis. But now, 360 that on itself, he is in fact working with another Loki.
It's a Loki buddy cop movie. And it's just Mobius. Maybe Mobius retires. Maybe he gets to go to that jet ski in the sky. Yep. And then Loki, the one that we know, Tom Hiddleston, gets to assume his position and then maybe do right and fulfill his glorious purpose there.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, Mobius leaves the void to burn down the TVA, which very interesting that the Tempad comes back into play. You think they would have just done that to begin with. I'm assuming Sylvie had that when she pruned herself.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, took it from Renslayer.
Yes. Then Sylvie and Loki lock arms together to enchant the Eliath, which is busy getting diverted by classic Loki's impressive replica of Asgard. Here.
I thought this was the spectacle of the episode. It might be the biggest spectacle of anything that we've seen so far on these television shows.
Best CGI for sure.
The
yeah.
rebuilding of Asgard just looked amazing.
I thought it was awesome, and again, it was a nice nod to what the Lokis were saying to one another in the in their little hideout area, where he's like, "You have knives; it weakens your senses and stuff like that." Little daggers, like,
yeah. And I feel like that. This is the first time since WandaVision, maybe since episode 8 of WandaVision, when I actually said "Whoa" out loud to nobody around me. I was just like, "Whoa." It was just cool.
It was very cool. And again, just to give a little love to Falcon and the Winter Soldier as well, that opening scene, I really enjoyed that opening scene with Falcon and the Wings and kind of working with Joaquin there. But very different shows.
We shit on that show a bit too much, and I'm sorry about that. It was just a huge disappointment. It was a good show, just in terms of Marvel, not the best.
And again, the rollout factor, I think, really had something to do with it. If that was the first one, that's a soft opening, that's a soft landing, and then kind of get really wacky and crazy with WandaVision and Loki. That's probably how the rollout should happen. But nevertheless, so I think that's awesome, right? That kind of diverts the attention of Eliath. And then classic Loki's absorbed by Eliath. So great. Richard E. Grant becomes, an all-time sixth man off the bench, right, sort of guy.
He's a great one-off. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Is. Yeah.
The plan works, so the Smoky Eliath opens and reveals an ominous mansion, and then end credits. That's it.
I would have liked a little post-credit to tell me what's going to happen next week.
But I like the mystery there.
There's tons of questions, and that's something that we want heading into a season finale. And my biggest fear heading into the season finale, because Hiddleston already said this, is that episodes 4 and 5 are going to be the big standouts. You would hope that 6 would also have some standout stuff as well.
And I hope so. And I think that's going to be getting to that point. And I think without further ado,
I'll ask 21 questions, and they all about us.
Our award-winning segment, 21 Gooestions, and it could be less than
21. I think we might have 21 here. I think there's a lot of questions.
It could be more
here.
Than 21.
We'll go 22, a baker's dozen. I'm not sure if that's right.
Just don't tell
who
Curtis.
Who is Eliath? Yeah. Who is Eliath? I think that's the big question out of all of this, right? So a little bit internet research reveals that he is, or she is, allegedly the first being to free itself from the timeline. Growing in power over time, eventually becomes a supreme time being over all realities from the dawn of life on Earth to, get this, the very edge of Kang's dominion, a temporal barrier that's blocking Eliath from entering Kang's realm, Chronopolis.
I'm really hoping that when we finally get introduced to Kang, it isn't Kang was in the back the whole time. Kang was here the whole time. He just never showed himself.
So I think this is interesting, because then this leads to the next question of who is in the mansion in the sky. So if that is to be the temporal barrier, if we were to assume that of Eliath there and getting through, if Eliath was actually the temporal barrier, right, and not just being blocked by it, that would lead to the mansion being Chronopolis and Kang the Conqueror there, right? So I think that is some sort of logic there, if you want to follow it.
And that would be an awesome reveal if we had been introduced to Kang at any point in any of the other properties. It's just so weird. Or I just don't think it's going to happen. But like, if they just introduce Kang in episode 6 of Loki.
Yeah, but again, this is supposed to be, I think,
the real introduction
to him, right? Is kind of that. And then again, like with Kang the Conqueror, he moves forwards and backwards in time and so often that like, is this really an introduction? This could be the end of his road, you know what I mean?
And also,
it doesn't really matter with that, right?
So up against all the theories of like, well, what if Reed Richards isn't WandaVision? They've actually casted Kang the Conqueror. So this is something that could happen.
Right, and if we're following everything, like all the tracks of like the timekeepers are heavily related to Kang the Conqueror in the comic books, so are our ties with Scarlet Witch and Agatha Harkness. So there a lot of these things that we're getting to, they're tying together in some way, shape, or form, which and eventually can lead to, of course, Fantastic Four. There's ties to Doctor Strange in there, but Secret Wars too, which is again my ultimate. Discharge Depot moment there that I'm waiting for.
Has anyone possibly thrown out that maybe Mephisto is in the castle?
Ooh, I would like that. A devilish. There was the devil in the very first episode.
Check the box.
They pointed to.
Yeah,
I think that would be the okie doke there.
I think you pointed out to me, and I'm not sure if you have it anywhere in these notes, but is Loki in there? Is there another Loki?
Yeah, so this is my question too. So we talk about this with Richard E. Grant's character here. So is he really dead, right? Because we know, we don't necessarily know what happens to the people when they're absorbed by Eliath, right? We see it, but you're not really sure. And he is the one who removed himself and lived longer than any other Loki on the timeline, right? So he is the foresight of being the wisest and the oldest of the most time in there. And he thought that the only way to remove, to fix himself and to have him live the longest was to remove himself from the equation, right? So he puts himself in isolation. What if he was just explaining his major plan, like a la Bond, James Bond villain, to the good guys that is Loki the whole time? And this was just kind of like to get everything open, and maybe he wants to reveal his plan.
Maybe, when he removed himself, he went to the void, and then he wanted to go see his family again, and they just sent him back to the void, and he just built the castle in the void, and he's so powerful that he can build his own Asgard there. So to kind of remind him of his own place. So that could be a huge possibility too.
And I believe, and I'm not mistaken, I believe the early rumors when Richard E. Grant was announced to be in this show is that he was going to be playing a villain. So whether that was right or wrong, I don't know, but maybe there is one other shoe to drop there. Regardless, I thought his cameo in this was pretty much flawless.
Awesome.
I thought it was great.
Fantastic.
But what about Ravonna Renslayer? Is she a variant of Kang the Conqueror?
Oh, I like that. Two.
So this is kind of what I'm thinking here. And let me see if I have this right here. So could Ravonna be a variant of Kang, which would be adapting the storyline from the comic book, The First Resurrection? And just hang with me here, okay? So I'm just going to read something from Wikipedia. Years later, the Beyonder plucks a living Kang from the time stream to participate on the villain's side and the first side of the Secret Wars. Soon after, it was revealed that while Kang has indeed died, his constant time traveling had created a number of alternate Kangs. The Kang, to discover this, had to be drawn to limbo after his time travel vehicle was destroyed by Thor. Maybe that's Loki. Maybe that's an adaptation there. Finding Immortus, who Immortus is another version of Kang, finding his remains inside his fortress, Kang assumes the role of Lord of Time and discovers alternate versions of himself using viewing devices that he finds. So it's very, very interesting. At one point, he brings Ravonna to limbo. From the moment before her death, unintentionally creating an alternate reality where he was slaying, determined to be the only Kang that they joined together. I find just a lot of similarities for that. So I think, you know, I may have convoluted some things there, but I think if you're interested, the First Resurrection might be something to look into if you're trying to find some strings to pull on here.
Mm-hmm.
Immortus, a variant of Kang who resides in limbo. Could that be something? So, you know, whether we get Kang the Conqueror outright or not, I'm not too concerned about, because I know this is leading towards it. So whether if it's like a post-credit scene, like Thanos at the end of Avengers, right? Something like that, I will be satisfied with, even if the main villain is not Kang.
Okay, so now that you just mentioned that, I think that might be the perfect way to introduce the villain in this final episode, is that Renslayer the whole time is a variant of Kang. And that, so now we are getting Kang, but we're not necessarily getting a new Kang that we have not met yet in the season finale. And that kind of ties things up in a semi-confusing way, but a way that properly fits the show.
And maybe that's why they're spending so much time with Loki and Sylvie having a relationship, and the fact that you can love yourself or something like that, to kind of set up the idea that, okay, this is what's happening with Kang and Ravonna. I don't know. That's kind of far-fetched, but, you know, I think it's something we can go with.
Well, so you have here, will Sylvie or Mobius die in episode 6? I believe that Sylvie lives. I think Mobius does die.
Yeah, I don't think, Owen Wilson's too big
of a character. Or one of the variants of Mobius dies.
Yes. Yeah. I think that could work out.
Jetski.
And I could see Sylvie going. I could see Sylvie going there, but she seems to have a good role. I think if we were to put a bet on, or odds on, who would be the most likely to survive and appear in future titles, it's probably Kid Loki.
Are you including Sylvie in this too?
Yeah.
I think Sylvie might be a part of season 2. I feel like Kid Loki might be more of you might see him one more time in the next episode and that's it.
Well, I just mean in totality of the MCU moving forward.
Well, no, but I'm saying though, saying you might see him in the episode, and you're not going to see him next season or in any of the movies.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could be setting up Young Avengers. I mean, we've talked about this before, that seems to be the big push to everything. And again, I thought he kind of really stood out as a character there.
Or the spinoff that's coming out in December, Asgard Babies.
Yeah.
Which is all the baby versions of the, Heimdall's there. Lady Sif is there. Well, the baby Sif, sorry.
Right, and they got baby legs, but full arms, so it's like Rick and Morty.
Yes.
The baby cop. I like that. We could get into that here. But again, I like Kid Loki. My money's on him.
By the way, that would be the worst What If episode, if they're like, what if we go to Asgard and everyone's a baby?
That could be fun. I don't know. I could see that. Just people just spewing up on one another. Or that could be I Think You Should Leave skit.
That'd be fun. 1980s, early 90s. Hey, we need more with this property. Make them babies? Question mark? Yeah.
Is that like a Paul Rudd baby genius obsession there? Like we saw in Conan O'Brien?
Well, no. Muppet babies, Looney Tune babies. They did all this stuff.
That's true. All right. Yeah, I like it. I'm a little worried about the idea of Young Avengers too, by the way. If that is like where all the marbles are going in the basket.
Yeah.
Because who's that going to be for?
Us.
Kids? You know, because you see Kid Loki like sipping on like high C. You know, like he's not drinking, like, but he's a king. Guy can do whatever he wants, you know, but he's choosing to drink. And
you guys
high
like
C.
Baby Yoda? How about 15 of these little guys? Boom.
I just have my reservations that it could be too kid friendly.
All right, I believe that we have a couple more of these.
Yo, you saw that Easter egg?
Yes. So, of course, in the opening scene showing the door to the timekeepers, the symbols on the door are an hourglass or, turned on inside goo, the infinity symbol. Mm. How do you like them apples?
I like them apples a bunch. I bet they are not Granny Smith's.
They're not Granny Smith's, but they could be as tasty as President Loki's hand, which got bitten off by the Gator Loki, a la Captain Hook.
Or Chubbs.
More appropriately, Chubbs.
You're a crook, Captain Hook. Buster.
What's hanging around in the void? Just the Counting Crows and a bunch of Lokis, apparently. We have the USS Enterprise. If you're not familiar with that, you should read up on the Philadelphia Experiment conspiracy theory, which was rumored to be experimenting with cloaking technology, I believe in the 1940s. Mm-hmm. But then was believed to be displaced momentarily. And then when returned to the experiment site, crew members were allegedly welded within the framework of the ship. And that is what, of course, is seen blasting the Eliath early on in the episode. We get the Sphinx and the pyramids, like I mentioned last week, where Kang the Conqueror's time machine was a Sphinx-related machine, which is past self first used to travel to ancient Egypt. And then you have something here which I'm not sure is English.
Quenage?
Yes.
So Quenage is the company that bought Stark Towers or Avengers Towers in the comics. And that is on. So you saw last week, possibly like a New York background and Avengers Tower in the background. They go by it real quick and it says Quenage on the side of the building.
Oh, and so in the comic books, that's something that that's interesting. I like that there. Speaking of the comic books, we get a nice little nod to Thanos's copter. In the first 10 minutes it's shown, actually. It's a reference to the comic art The Cat and the Cosmic Cube, where Thanos uses the copter to grab the Cosmic Cube, but it doesn't work. It's a funny meme nonetheless, Thanos in a yellow helicopter.
And I mean, you wish you got this in Infinity War, or you wish you got this in Endgame.
What if instead of waiting for the trio of heroes there, Captain America, Iron Man, and Thor, where he just puts his helmet down and his sword down, he just lands on the copter, and he's just hovering above and then just lands down, hops out of the copter, then they go for the battle.
And then he goes, pretty sweet ride.
What do you think? and we get the Yellowjack helmet, as mentioned. We get Throg going underground to the Loki lair.
Which, by the way, so with the Yellowjacket helmet, I saw this theory out there that when he disintegrates at the end of the first Ant-Man movie, all of his body parts go to different places.
I love that. And if they can tie up that string from the first one in Quantumania, that would be amazing, you know?
So that's probably the weakest part of the first Ant-Man is the mirror villain. And I would have really have liked it if there was just a little bit more to Darren Bragg's character. That's a joke. Darren Bragg was an outfielder in the Red Sox.
Pretty good at the suicide squeeze, if I'm not mistaken.
There was definitely a couple of those. And I think he had one season where he had 12 home runs. Pretty good.
Not too bad. Not to be confused with Darren Lewis.
Or Damon Buford,
right. Troy O'Leary? Are we going through here?
Which might cut it off at O'Leary.
Okay.
O'Leary's a good place enough to cut it off. Number 25. He had two home runs in the ALCS. ALDS, sorry. Don't get on me. ALDS game five.
He was very disrespected after they walked Nomar Garciaparra to load the bases
twice
against the Cleveland Indians. Yeah. Yes. So, I mean, the only thing he had to do at that point was hit a grand slam.
Mm-hmm. Throg.
Throg was good stuff. And again, a nice little nod here and there, you know, the little bit, maybe a little bit more exposition with him. But you know, nonetheless, a little nod there. So I think that just about covers all the Easter eggs, unless there was anything that I missed that you would like to mention at this time.
No, that's pretty much it. And just really my big question heading into this final episode is Renslayer.
Yeah.
What are we doing here? Yep. Mm-hmm. Just what's happening. That's it. Because I think that castle is going to have something cool in it. I hope it blows my mind. And I love that idea that Renslayer could be a variant of Kang, and that's how we get introduced to Kang, while still not being like, it was Kang the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think that's nice. And then, yeah, what's the deal with the TVA? You know, that's kind of what was its purpose? Why was it set up? That's what I want to know. And I can't wait. I'm very excited here. So between this and Black Widow, you know, like, it's a great time to be a nerd fan.
And that'll do it for this week. Come back next week to go ahead and get some more help.
Hey, let's do get help.
What?
Get help?
No.
Come on, you love it.
I hate it.
It's great. It works every time.
It's humiliating.
Do you have a better plan?
No.
We're doing it.
We are not doing get help.